This is the beginning of Class 9.
That means let's take the four elements which have one goal. What's one goal? Sense powers, okay? The sense powers. You know, I'm trying to think if living tissue is a good translation for that. I have a feeling it might be. I can't think of any living tissue which is not the four elements which have the sense powers. You know what I mean? I can't think of any four elements included in your body which have sense powers which are not living tissue. I think they're trying to say the same thing. Okay. Consider that the living tissue in your body, basically. It's not the main cause for your mind. Okay? It's not that material cause for your mind. It's not what turns into your mind. Because de la nena lola nebe makyavecha, which means you can damage the sense powers and you don't damage the mind, necessarily. Yeah, this is a big argument of Dharmakirti's, and you have to listen to it in plain English, okay? The Charvakas say what? They say what about the body and the mind?
They're inseparable.
Yeah, that the body provides a unique basis for the mind to stay, to be there and to stay. That's their belief. And that happens to be the belief of Western countries too. You know, that the physical body, and maybe the brain mainly, provides this unique basis for the mind. And unique is a word that Dharmakirti uses also. He agrees that in general, the sense powers have some kind of supporting function for the mind. But he doesn't agree that they are the unique basis for the mind. He doesn't agree that they are the one main source for mind to come from. He doesn't agree with that. He agrees that they play a role, but he doesn't agree that they are the one main source.
So without them, I mean, if you had no sense power,
formless realm. You can, according to Buddhism, you wouldn't have any sense perceptions, but you would have mental thoughts. You'd have mental perceptions. So he says something interesting. You know, if what is it for the mind to be healthy? Or what is it for the mind to be... There's a word in Tibetan called gyepa, which means... it means like when your body is fat and happy. You know? It means like healthy and happy, you know? Prosperous in a way. There's a word like that. I don't know how to say it. Gyepa means why. It's like sangye. Means prosper or something like that. Just be chubby and healthy and, you know, shining with health and stuff like that. That word is used for the mind when the mind is in a healthy, happy state. And like if the mind were well fed, like if the mind is in general being sustained nicely, then it's clear and it's happy and it's joyful in a way. It's happy and it's joyful in a way. That's the Buddhist definition of a nice, healthy, well-fed mind. Okay? And what he's trying to say is, if you damage one of the sense powers, then if there were this unique relationship that the Charvakas say there is, then somehow the mind should become less contented. The mind should be somehow distressed if you poked your eye out or if you cut your finger, then the mind should always be distressed. Okay? There should never be a case when the mind wasn't distressed. Or you could say it this way. If you removed one of the five sense powers, if you remove 20% of your sense powers, then the mind should get 20% less gyepa. Should somehow get distressed by 20%. It should lose its health by a similar ratio if the body were the unique and ultimate basis for the mind. In the way that if you like took a certain amount of material from the acorn and the oak tree is somehow stunted or deficient. Like that. I mean, it sounds like a silly argument. So, you know, who would believe that if you poked your eye out, your mind would get distressed necessarily, okay? Or 20% smaller, or something like that. But that would be the necessary consequence if the mind had this unique relationship with the body, with the sense powers. And then he gives the example of bodhisattva. And there was a famous bodhisattva, I forgot his name. Anyway, he met a demon on the road in India. He was in Vimla. He was in Nalendra, one of the main monasteries. And he was on his way there. And the demon said, he disguised himself as a normal person, and he said, if you're a big bodhisattva, then let me have your eyeball. So the bodhisattva, he pushed his fingers into the eye socket and pulled out his own eye. And he gave it to this being to make him happy. I mean, the story of Nagarjuna is the same. The way that Nagarjuna died is that someone asked him for his head, and he gave it. Something like that. So then the demon threw the eyeball on the ground and smashed it. And the guy almost lost his bodhicitta. It's a famous example, you know, can you lose your bodhicitta after you have it? And then he went to the monastery finally, and people used to make fun of him because he had a disfigured eye. And he used to say, well, I've seen more of the scriptures with one eye than you see with two, something like that. Anyway, by the way, you're not allowed to do that until you're ready. Okay, they say start with vegetables. Shantideva says start with vegetables. You break your bodhisattva vow if you do it too early. You shouldn't try
give
to
your eye away too early.
Or do things like chopping your arm off or giving someone your kidney. If you're not ready, you're not supposed to do it. Because then you'll regret it later and it'll be a bad deed. If you regret a good deed, that's a very bad deed. So they say don't do a good deed. Don't like give away all your money because you'll regret it 3 days later, and then all that good power will become a bad, negative power.
What about myriad exceptions to this particular rule? Fact that most ordinary human beings are distressed.
He says my kelly. Now they say there's an explanation in the reading of why people get distressed, but it's not. If it were a unique basis, an ultimate basis for the mind, then the mind should become always distressed, regardless of who you are. So it seems to be a matter of training and not of an innate relationship. There's no inherent relationship between your body and mind of that type. There just is not. The bodhisattva feels something. He senses the feeling of the eye coming out, but he just feels happy. He feels joy that someone has asked him for something. I think when you get to that level and someone asks you for something, you just feel very happy to give it to them. You don't really think about that you're not going to have it anymore.
But if he's addressing it to Charvaka, I would assume that they don't really believe in bodhisattvas, and they wouldn't believe that you could pluck your eyebrows, roll out, and be content. So it's sort of a moot point.
It must have been a good argument for them, or Dharmakirti wouldn't have given it. You're not allowed to give an argument in two cases. You're not allowed to argue to somebody an argument if they already believe it. That's bad logic. Illogic. It's one of the faults of logic. You're not allowed to argue to Dharmakirti that things are impermanent because he already saw it. You don't have to argue. If it's unnecessary, it's a bad argument. Also, if your opponent hasn't seen the truth of your reason, you're not allowed to give it to them. Dharmakirti wrote down those rules. So, apparently, there were some Chavakas maybe who had seen a Buddhist do something like that. I don't know. It would have to be.
And your average Westerner would say that that's possible.
Well, no, I think it's very common that. I think the best one in the West is when a woman has a baby and she goes through that suffering. I've been at the bedside of a woman who has just gave birth maybe an hour before or something. They're like beaming, they're like happy and thrilled, and the sense powers have undergone a very bad damage, you know. If the sense powers were the cause that turned into the mind, then the mind of a woman who had just given birth should be quite distressed and damaged, and it's not. You know, it's actually quite beaming and happy and happy. giver.
Yeah, but they don't have to pain at the time. An hour later, they don't have the pain. If they have the pain, they would.
I mean, must you have some discomfort, I would imagine. Not having been to it in this way. There must be extreme discomfort. Especially like a cesarean or something. But they're smiling, holding the kid up, and, you know. What I'm saying is, it's hard for you to imagine what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that he's saying that it's so silly that you can't accept it. If the sense powers were the unique cause that turned into the mind, or the unique basis for the mind, then a woman who just gave birth should suddenly be very depressed, upset or very sad, or some are, but not all. Okay, I mean, when you talk cause and effect, when you take away the acorn, all oak trees don't grow. That's a nirlingi view. That's a material cause. So there, obviously, the pain has some kind of effect on a normal mind, but it's not necessary. So it's not the nirlingi view. It's not that necessary relationship which a direct cause must have with its direct result. It's just, it doesn't. And, you know, I've been teaching this. This is the third time I taught it, right? In this last week or so. You can't go home and say, oh, yeah, now I believe in future lives, you know. But given all these 10 arguments together, you know, if you can get some kind of a sense, if you can start... If you put them all together as a sum, I think they can affect your thinking about future lives. I don't expect you to accept it right away. But think about the relationship between your sense powers and your mind. The living tissue and your mind are just not like that. Yeah.
Well, what about all these chemicals that people taking out of the sense of everybody?
No, they talk about it. They talk about it.
Or, acid. I mean, obviously, there is a great connection.
The Charvakas say that. They say, well, what happens when a person gets drunk? You know, the alcohol affects the sense powers. And then the person's mind becomes crazy. You know? And they ask that question, too. I don't remember the answer. Obviously, it affects, but it's not the main cause. Obviously, there is a connection. But it's not the acorn to the oak tree.
So, in meditation, supposedly, whatever happens to the mind, is there not something happens to the senses? Is there not energy going through?
On a higher level, and on the tumo mayim bina, right? What's that? Tumo mayim bina. In the teachings that I can't mention in the sutra class, there's obviously a relationship, but not to the gross physical body, and not to the physical body that you think you don't know. That's a different subject. Okay. But that is a very important result for the second stage of tantric practice. That's a great relationship, but different powers and everything. Okay, yeah.
I'm just having a lot of difficulty with the first six and this one, just trying to get the logical principle. And so, would you say that the logic behind this one, and probably some of the others, is that because of the word always, if there's an exception, or if there is a higher case or some, then it disproves the...
If there's an exception, it shows that it's not the nirlingi view.
Okay.
It's not the main material cause. If it were a contributing factor, there could be exceptions. That would prove that the sense powers are a contributing factor to mind, but they're not the stuff which turns into mind. You did not come from sense powers. Your mind did not come from sense powers. Which means you didn't come from sense powers. Where did you come from? I mean, you don't think of it. You just assume it was your mother's and father's stuff. It's not. And there's so many evidences that it's not. And And finally, when you get to the evidence that the mind is quite comfortable, you know, you're almost relieved by them to hear, oh yeah, it was just your mind. Oh, well, that makes sense. Same stuff, you know, came the moment before, turned into my mind now, that's why all these things went on. Okay.
Michael, I'm sorry, can you just translate that all?
Consider the elements in the form of sense powers. You see, some people on that elimination chart got a little confused because the sense powers are made of atoms. They are made of the four elements also. There are inner four elements and there are outer four elements. Consider the inner four elements. They are not the unique... Let me see what word he used. I know he used. You're not the unique cause of mind. Because when they are damaged, the mind is not always damaged. What's that? I don't think so. If you want it, you have to come with the other class. It's in your, it's in your handout. Lo Chö Chen means let's consider mind, main mind. Now Dharma Kirti is gonna. Let's take mind. Consider mind. Lo Chö Chen means consider mind. Now Dharma Kirti is going to turn the tables. What do you think he's going to say? Turn the tables from number 7. Yeah. Alright. Because not only do the sense powers not provide the basis for mind, mind provides the cause for the sense powers.
Mind does.
Yeah. But if he says cause, isn't he going to get in trouble? Yeah, and turn into the sense powers, right? So he doesn't say cause, he's tricky. He says basis, support. Vipinje means, how to say it? We're going to get into this in the next class, but there are basically two kinds of karma. And they are two links in the wheel of life. Two different links. I should bring the wheel of life, please. Yeah, you know that wheel of life with the monster who got the world in his hands? The second link is a potter making pots. That's called many weird translations. A good translation would be immature karma. Immature karma. Unripened karma. That's the karma you do throughout your life.
Can we cause the creating the causes? Karma in the sense of creating the causes?
Karma in the sense of all the things you think, say, and do in this life. Good or bad. Link number 10. Do you know what the 10th link looks like? Number 2 is makes sense. It's a potter. Number 10 is a pregnant woman. And that means right karma. That's another kind of karma. That karma is your mind, mainly. And it's going to throw a new birth. It's going to project a new birth. So it's called projecting karma. And the difference between the second link, which is unripened karma, and the 10th link, which is ripened karma, is links number 8 and 9. Links number 8 and 9, we're going to talk about it next week. Basically, they are types of desire which trigger the karma and cause it to project in your brain. And that's a very important subject to learn if you want to get out of rebirth. You know. Excuse me?
About
yeah. What makes number 10 right karma and number 2 unright karma is number 8 and 9. Number 8 and 9 are forms of desire that occur as you die, which...
That occur as you die?
As you die, which make that karma potent enough. They give it the potency to throw a new life. So in that sense, the mind was... What's its real relationship to the sense product? It basically causes them. He's not saying they turn into the sense products, but basically they are the thing which throws the existence of the sense products.
But in a way, I'm just saying it's the thing which causes life. You know, it's what's causing life, and then life.
What's causing samsaric life?
Yeah, and then life is connected to the sense products. And it seems like it's further down the line the sense products.
Yeah.
Or he's saying sense powers is life.
Well, now don't forget he's being sarcastic. He's exaggerating the case. Why? They are so attached to thinking that the sense powers are the basis for mind. So he says, you know how you sometimes do when you're trying to convince somebody of something, you say exactly the opposite for effect, you know, and see. Not only did I not, you know, lie to you that I went out of my way to tell you exact truth. Probably wasn't, but you say the exact opposite. Not only do the sense powers not cause the mind, they come from the mind. You know, and then he waits to see how they react. This is Dharmakirti's argument. Now he's got to prove that, obviously. Obviously they can't take that on face value. A Charvaka can't say, oh yeah, you're right, I didn't think of that. My mind from my former life, through my mind into this, my sense product into this mind. They don't accept that former mind existed. They might have to accept that there was a Panjaka Gyuwa. I don't know what you want to call that. Like a locomotive cause. It's the cause which pushes the thing into the future. It's a different kind of cause. Like, projecting. It's a projecting cause. It's the one which pushes this event into the future, makes it happen. Pen means what you do to an arrow with a bow. That's also called pen, not pen. So that's, I think this argument is more for effect. I don't think he's expecting a Charvaka to say, oh yeah, that's right. I think he's just trying to do a comment. What's that?
That's considered the mind. Mind provides the basis for the sense powers and the
right. Because it projects them. Say, Lotra Chen.
Lotra Chen.
Wangbo.
Wangbo.
Mepe.
Mepe.
Gyuyinpe.
Gyuyinpe.
Yeah, that's wrong. Law,
maybe,
let's consider the mind again. Chuchen means let's consider. An individual. What does Chuchen mean? Chuchen means Dharma. Or existing thing. So when you say Chuchen, it means let's take this thing. Che has two completely different meanings. Dharma has two completely different meanings. One is the Buddhist teachings, and one is any object in the universe is called a Dharma. So a couple years ago when the Bumble showed up for the winter debates for the first and last time, you know Bun, right?
Bun.
they came and they said, I'm a dog, Bunchen. I said, what? Bunchen. He says, Chuchen, not Bunchen. He said, we don't believe Chuchen, we are Bunch. It was really funny. I don't know, it would be like if someone was reading your newspaper and they were Catholic and it said baptism by fire and they said, Catholicism by fire. And you said, well, what do you mean? They said, well, we're not Baptists, so we can't use the word Baptist. You see, I mean, it would be that silly, you know? It was like really silly. What?
They're not coming back
again. Berlin is a religion that was in Tibet before.
They're not coming back?
They never came back. But they did pretty good. They just came back. But 1 year they came. Sakyas came 1 year. It's like a... You know, it's a... What do you call it? It's a competition. You know, they weren't really ready for it. It's very hard. Anyway. Non-ambiguity in them means it is the cause for mind to stay. Consider mind. It is the cause for the mind to stay.
It refers to mind?
Yeah. Take your mind. What is... Well, we'll get to that. What is keeping you alive, basically? Why does your mind go on? Why doesn't your mind just stop before you die? Or does it stop when you die? You know. But what makes it go on? Why did Marie Placide's mother die at that particular time? What made the mind stop at that particular time?
The body stops,
right? I mean, it appears to stop. Oh, we say that, right? The body stops and the mind stops. I mean, but why? Well, first of all, you don't know if the mind stops, right? I mean, that's not one of Dharmakirti's arguments, but that could be a pretty good argument. Actually, it comes later in Dharmakirti's text, but he says, you know, it's true that the body stops flopping around, and then you think the mind is gone or something, or the mind died, but you have no evidence, you have no proof that the mind died. You're drawing a conclusion that may or may not be true. You can't prove that the mind stopped just because the body stopped flopping around. Like if the mind were still inside the body, but the body stopped working, then the mind would be like a captive in there saying, ah, I'm still here, you know, and the body just is not cooperating. The body can't move anymore. But what if the mind is still there? You know, what if just the body stops working and the mind is stuck without a body? The mind doesn't die. You know, I mean, we don't know that that's not true. In fact, that's true. But we... Just because the body stops doesn't prove that the mind has stopped necessarily. But that's not this argument. He says, not only does mind cause the sense powers, mind keeps your mind going. Mind is why your mind goes on in this life. Mind is why your mind doesn't stop in this life. What keeps you alive, basically? Why do some people die and some people live? Why do old people live and young people die? What keeps the mind going?
That has been mind cause mind. It's like saying the tree causes the tree. I mean, how can you think something causes itself?
Oh, good, yeah. He didn't say that technically. What he said was mind causes the staying of the mind. Mind causes the sticking around of the mind. It's true that in a logical proof, you're not allowed to repeat one element twice. You can't say, take the mind, it's a mind, because, you know what I mean? You can't. You can't.
What
is the third sentence? I didn't give it to you yet.
Why? Why?
Yeah. Why does your mind stay? Basically, I mean, didn't you wonder why you're still alive? It's kind of unlikely, you know? I mean, cars get older. I have an 8-year-old car, and it's like... well made, but it's getting old, you know. Yeah, what makes the mind... Why does the mind stay, you charvakas? You know, houses don't stay past 40 years, 50 years, you know, normally. Cars don't stay past 10 normally. Why do people stick around for so long? Why does your mind stay? What keeps your mind here?
Why does it stay around longer?
Yeah, or why doesn't it? Yeah. And he says... former cases of mental karma cause it to stay, and we'll talk about it.
Former cases?
Yeah, mental karma from the past. How's that? I'll tell you.
But it looks like it's a deterioration of the body. I mean, I would have to agree with this, whatever they think they are. It certainly looks that way.
Yeah,
it certainly looks like your mind goes when your body goes.
Well, why is the body goes?
Because
it's... You see, this
is
the
way it is.
So this is the argument. I mean, it's so elementary that you can't see it because of your cultural background. It has nothing to do with the truth of the thing. Why do they cross the balance? Why does your mind?
Why then?
Why her? You know, why at that moment? You know, why?
It's circumstances.
Why did those circumstances occur? You see, that's what a Buddhist has to be thinking. There's causes for everything. You're not even a good Western scientist. You're not even a good Western thinker. You're not even a good Western normal person. If you say there's no cause for some things, but there's causes for other things, it doesn't make sense. If everything has a cause, then there has to be a reason why this person died today and not tomorrow. And why she died before he died. He's much older. And I saw Dr. Shen, he's 82 years old. He's like, hey, I'm Michael, how are you? and then Marie-Pussy's mom, you know, healthy big lady. And she just, they gave her everything. They used everything. And she just died. She died healthy. I mean, she just suddenly died. You know, they had her, they said she's going to be all right now, everything's fine. You know, and then, boom, she's dead. You know, why?
Is that the ripening karma that you were talking about?
It's not exactly the same. This is referring to the general mental karma of your whole past life. What we just talked about were those very specific last-minute triggering karmas that throw your life into the future. If you could affect those karmas, if you could affect those emotions at death, and we're going to talk about it next class because it's so important, your next birth could be quite different. That's a big deal. That's so important that we're going to go to another book, actually, for that, which is the Abhisamma. We're going to go back to Perfection of Wisdom. But that's his argument. So let's pretend you're a Charaka. I'm Dharmakirti. Basically, the argument is this. You know, well, why do you think you're still alive? What do you think is keeping you going? You know, and they say, well, you know, my elements didn't dissolve yet. And then he's got to try to prove. He say, well, why do some people with such good elements die quickly, you know, and other people with shaky elements live a long time, you know, years and years? You know, why? Why do some people die before others?
Because maybe you've been resistant towards sickness.
But don't some old people die before the young people? I mean, when you're talking causation, it has to be all the time. I mean, it should be an absolute rule that older people die before younger people.
But there are exceptions in Buddhism too.
Healthy people die after unhealthy people.
You're assuming that the causes are always supposed to be the same.
And then you say, well, it does, because, you know, even Venus Garolitis or whatever, he was very healthy, but the elements got so messed up so fast. That the elements, they messed up his elements to such a high degree, 50% of his blood became carbon monoxide, the oxygen in his blood.
Did that really die?
But then a Buddhist wants to know, well, why him? Now, the newspaper said 60 people in the whole United States die this way a year. Okay, so out of 200 million people, why him? And that's, you know, it just sounds obvious, it sounds silly,
but that's
the way it goes, but you're brainwashed by your culture.
No, but that's what medical research does. They go into the body and they check and see why him. They say, well, yeah, it happened to him because he was
sleeping in that room and the propane leaked out and he died.
Yeah.
But the Buddha says, well, why did the propane leak out when he was in the room?
Yeah, a good example. There's a very rare disease where a child ages and by the time they're 8 years old, they've gone completely through the whole normal life cycle and their body becomes very old and then they die. I mean, there's probably a medical explanation for it. But
no, there should be.
Explain why it happened.
Explaining, well, anyway, I get your argument. What you're saying is, Michael Roach, you're just explaining you've accepted that the elements cause the mind to die. Because when the elements get messed up to a certain point, the mind dies. And you're just trying to argue why the elements got messed up or not.
Right.
That's what you should be debating to people. But your hands are hurt, so you can't do it. Okay. There's one kid in the monastery that he has his arm cut off. So he goes, he's doing his own hands. Cool. Okay. Change the subject when you can't get out of the argument.
You said has to be always true. What about many cases when that killing is wrong, and yet we find that the Buddha killed this person because there's an exception there, and you have a lot of these in Buddhism where you said this is wrong, and you're not supposed to do this, and you're not supposed to, but then you hear this great Lama, he was a great Lama, he did something. But he was a great Lama. You know?
Well, because there's exceptions to some things, doesn't mean there's exceptions to everything.
Yeah, but I'm saying, you know, why do you have to say that everything has to be, you know, true all the time? Because it's not the case in Buddhism that everything is true all the time, because you are arguing the greatest Lama who made exceptions to that rule.
Well, let's say people try to say that because Buddhism believes in emptiness, and because emptiness means that the thing could have been anyway, and then it just depends on your perceptions. Therefore, logic is not necessary in Buddhism. Therefore, logic is not applicable to Buddhists, or therefore, Buddhists don't believe in elementary proof of something. You know, because it could be anything. You know, that reality has a dual standard according to Buddhism, ultimate reality and relative. That's completely ridiculous and wrong. You know, and you see it in these great, long dissertations on Buddhism. Well, Dharmakirti's logical approach is accepted by, on every level of Buddhism.
So,
there's no level of Buddhism which doesn't accept Dharmakirti's logical rules. Those, and logic is not silly, or logic is not irrelevant at a higher level or something. It's not at all. It applies all. You can logically prove Buddhahood, and you can logically prove Tantric Buddhahood, and everything, and only that.
Yeah, but it seems like you make the rules and you make the exceptions and everything. Okay.
Show me a rule that I
made. No, not you.
Show me a rule that Dharma Kirti made. It's not true.
What about killing? What if you turn this argument backwards?
Killing's not a logical argument.
What if you turn this argument backwards, you know, as far as I can see it, that if it's mind that's recreating mind, that's making it continue.
Let's say this. I'm just going to state your argument.
No, you don't know my argument.
Let's say it's true that the thing that just before your first moment of mind in this life, let's say it's true, Michael Rose, that the thing that just before your first moment of consciousness in this life was your last consciousness in your last life. Let's say that that's true. Now go ahead.
That's interesting. Now that could be interesting, but let's play with mine.
Okay. Right.
Okay, so what I was going to say is that if it's not that the body is, that when the, you know, that the degeneration of the body is causing the seemingly end of the mind,
good.
If it's not that, then it would be that people could die any time. Why is it that most people die when they age, when their body is degenerate, when they're sick, when their body reflects a decrepit?
Okay.
You know, there wouldn't be that relationship.
It's like this. You know, you say this. You say, I'll draw it, but here's baby's body and baby's mind, according to you, right? And they're very healthy, and then it gets like, the baby's body starts to get older, and it gets worse, and the mind gets worse too. And then at the end, the body gets, you know, worse and worse until finally there's no body, and so therefore the mind stops. That's what you're saying.
According to you, if it was as you say, that has nothing to do with the body, that is the mind continuing, then there wouldn't be a relation. Then you wouldn't see this
relationship. Right. I'm saying there's an answer for that.
Relationship.
Then take it to you. I'm saying the same force is projecting both of them. And that force is lessening. They're both coming from a different force. And that force is, the energy of that force is lessening as time goes on.
So the body
is okay. And that's also why, according to my theory, okay, like kids can have diabetes because the parents had diabetes. Even though I say they don't have that unique relationship. They have a karma. They both have a karma to develop diabetes in the same family.
Michael, what exactly is...
That's my answer. You know, can I prove it to you? All I can give you is what's this class going to end up? I mean, it's going to end in another week or two. Hopefully. And... No, the plague has stopped my church. That's the main town for our business.
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, no more church at the corner. I'm sure my boss is going to try to get me to go there.
No. Don't go.
Yeah, that's exact town where all our business is. You should buy diamonds now. 3 months of money. Anyway, read every book you read, every conversation you have, there's allusions to the relationship between the body and the mind. It's a learned view. It's not an innate view. It's not that, you know, a primitive man believed this from the beginning. It's that your culture teaches it to you, and it's very hard to shake it. You know? All I can say is that, you know, take all of his arguments and just think about them. And I believe that, you know, frankly, 5 or 6 years from now, it will start to affect your mind. And if you keep studying and you hear other, if you steep yourself in these texts, then your mind will start to change. And you'll start to see it. And I don't claim that it's going to happen.
Yeah, but right now we're trying to put it in a logical manner.
We are really trying
right?
to.
So
and maybe, what I'm saying is that maybe I have. But maybe our culture is so strong that I can't do it.
But if that's the case, then why do we have the karma to be so dense, such a false culture? What did we do to be so...
No, it's a true course. We'll study it next course, right? Karma. But basically, ignorance is caused by, I don't know, misleading other people in your past life.
Collectively as a culture,
As a culture right now, we're collecting a very bad karma about abortions. You know, as a culture, morality. You know, as a culture, we will all suffer a result together later from accepting that. You know what I mean? And that's
from accepting abortion.
Yeah.
But should we accept unwanted pregnancy?
What I'm saying is that we will as a culture, we will as a group experience a result. Or if we all supported a war or something, we would all reap the karma.
You mean when we pay taxes and
we're partially responsible. We're going to say that next month.
What exactly is the third line that
he's
saying?
Oh, okay. So it's take the mind. It's the reason for... It's the reason why the mind stays. It's the cause for the mind to stay. Because what keeps the mind going is your former karma, your former mental karma. I'm sorry, what keeps the mind going is the mental karma from your past life. That's the real reason why you don't die.
So how does that take into account, like, tennis player who died from something that was outside, it wasn't natural causes, it was this thing that was outside. His karma caused this heating thing, and so how does that work?
This you got to study mind only school. By the way, what mind only school believes, and I'm not going to do it now, it's not that they don't think outside things exist at all. They believe that the mind and the thing which it perceives come from the same cause. So whatever may be the scarolitis' mind at that last moment, and the thing that made the propane leak out was the same thing. Did he die from the propane leaking? Not according to. Not according to Dharmakirti. He contributed to his death. The elements were not a nice place to stay at that time. But the mind, what caused the mind to appear to stop or the life to stop in this life was the wearing out of his past mental karma.
So it's some weird coincidence then.
No, it's not, is it? It's not.
That just happened to go at that time and his karma.
The body died. The body seemed to die. Sense powers stopped working. But did it stop his mind? That's the main question. I don't know if Dharmakirti would say. No, he would say it didn't stop the mind.
Michael.
Didn't stop the life. Not why the life stopped.
Getting back to what he did say, what does that mean? The mental karma that you have left, what does that mean?
Oh, it just means your bad and good thoughts are your best thoughts. That's what keeps you going. Now, why did he restrict it to mental karma and not mention physical or speech? He's making an extreme statement to try to convince somebody. He doesn't want to mention anything physical. Physical and verbal deeds are physical. He's avoiding that. See, he's a careful logician. He says, you know, it's mind that causes mind. He's trying to rub it in. He's trying to rub it in. What keeps you alive is your mind, not your sense of
mind. If he was speaking to us, would he safely say both mental and physical karma?
If you're a Buddhist, yeah. But he restricted it to mental karma. Because he's trying to prove that mind causes mind. He could have said your mind, body, and speech of your past life. He's restricting it to the mental karma of your past life. The bad thoughts and good thoughts of your past life.
The mental karma does what in this case?
Keeps the mind going in this life.
Is there in all of this a distinction between the mind, the way you defined it several classes back, as being pure and knowing, I mean clear and knowing, and the sort of contents in the mind that energize it? I mean, it seems, because if fundamental mind is clear and knowing, it's always clear and knowing, and it doesn't wear out and then, you know, reappear in the next life. So there are really two kinds of minds that you talk about. Right?
The clear and knowing is a quality of all states of mind, even when you're very upset, or when you're being very angry, or when you're very ignorant, or it's still clear and knowing.
And dying.
You're still aware. Mm-hmm. You're still aware. Yeah, and dying is a distinction between gross state of mind and a subtle state of mind. But you never lose your mind.
So technically speaking, it's not that aspect of the mind that we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
He uses a very unusual word for mind throughout this argument. He calls it yilotopa, which you never see anywhere else. He mixes up three different words for mind, and he keeps repeating it over and over again. I've never seen a satisfactory explanation why. Maybe that has something to do with your question. You know, maybe he means the basic awareness or something. Maybe he just wants to talk about mind as awareness. Because he uses a combination of words for mind that appear nowhere else. And I've asked many people, and I wasn't satisfied with the answer. He uses a different kind of word for mind. He uses a different phrase for mind than I've seen anywhere else. Throughout this whole argument. You know, it means the Sanskrit was a different word. So it might mean something like awareness. You know, why are you aware? Where does your awareness come from?
But then he's not saying that it's the awareness that...
He's talking about the stream of awareness.
That's what maintains... and maintains life.
When he gets to that,
it's a different.
Let's take your stream of awareness. What keeps your stream of awareness going? Your past mental karma. But it is true. I think he wants to avoid all specific references to mind. I think he just wants to say your mind in general, your awareness in general, and he uses a different word for that. Okay, have a break, and we have one more proof to go.
Samjorte.
Right, because it is too cold. Maybe allergic to lots of things. Now, Melba means normal person. I'll explain it more later. Normal person, Amelbe.
What, less considerable?
Yeah, the chit-chat's going to be at the end, right? Chika means what, you know? What's Chima mean?
Death.
Death, yeah. Chika means the moment of death. Literally means the mouth of death.
So that's considered a normal person at time of death, or?
Yeah, at the moment of death. Sim, his mind. Let's consider the mind of a normal person at the moment of death. Okay, I'll say it again. Let's consider the mind.
Let's consider the mind.
Of a normal person.
A normal person.
At the moment of his death.
The moment of death. Thank
his or her death. I gotta get used to that. Any H won't get out of this thing. You have to learn PC talk.
Thank you.
I understand you're a PC advisor. Say Ranga.
Ranga.
Sanchima.
Sanchima.
Sanjorte.
Sanjorte.
Okay. Rangda means of its own type, its own kind. Sem Chima means mind of the next life. Samjor means crosses the line. So, it crosses the line into the next life and becomes again a mind of its own type. Similar kind of mind. That state of mind is death, right? It does cross the line into a similar state of mind in the future life. How's that?
Cross the line
into a similar state of mind in the next life. Why? Chakche in miniature. Say chakche.
Chakche
in miniature.
In miniature.
Chakche in miniature.
Chakche in miniature.
Chakche means it possesses desire. In miniature means because it possesses desire. What possesses desire?
Mind.
Which mind?
Mind of death.
One before.
Mind at the moment of death. The mind of death. So what Dharmakirti is saying is, because a normal person's mind has desire as he dies, therefore that mind must cross the line into a similar, into the same thing, more of the same, in the future life. I had a lot of trouble with that proof. I mean, that, you know, is that a charva going to buy that? You know, and I don't understand the process that he's describing. You know, and it's a very, very big point in Buddhism. Supposedly, if you're an enemy destroyer, if you're an arhat, the difference between us and an arhat, if you're not an arhat, is that they don't have desire. Therefore, their mind will not have to go on to another samsaric birth. And don't forget, we always distinguish between a suffering rebirth and then the continuation of the mind in a paradise in nirvana or something like that. It's not that you just stop. That's not nirvana. There's nothing to do with that. It's that your mind no longer has to go into this crappy kind of life.
Michael, when you talk about desire, is that a word that, you know, it's kind of used a lot, but I mean, when I'm thinking desire, they don't mean like desire, like wanting something, do they?
We're going to go into the definition of it next class. And please don't miss the next class. Okay? And if there's anyone who's on the border of, like, if you can reach them, the doctors, they ought to catch the next one. Because then, what we're going to do is go into what is the nature of that desire as you die, and why does it cause you to be born? And that's very important. That's the whole next class. So what is it? Thursday. It's Thursday. Because it'll take me an hour and a half to do that. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it makes good sense.
But it's not like
as it stands here, it's not very comfortable for me.
I
It's not just regular desire. It's not like that flat, simple
desire. It's not like that, no. And you know, there's a lot of flavors to desire, right? Desire to help other people. Desire to see people get out of samsara. Desire to be free of samsara. Desire to reach eternal happiness. You know, desire.
So it refers to which desire?
We're going to talk about it next week. It's an advertising thing. Next class. Thursday.
It's coming exactly.
Then you have your debut. When?
Monday.
October 3rd.
Did I say that? Oh, yeah. And that's the last class I have to teach. Okay, good. The other class gets their review tomorrow. That's good.
Homework.
What is it you want? What is it about? What does Umzei mean? Who means head? Zay means the head in the sense of leader. Zay means to do. So the chanting master is called Unzay. First
female chanting master. Sangye Shindu Mithe Ruwaki Jogu Nanda Shimba Shubhashu Idam Radhamanda Kandiyatayami Gewadi
This is the end of Class 9.